If you are using Winamp, if you are watching the broadcast, you can see that I put as the theme today, not bound by time. Now, this subject actually goes into other fields which are not as obvious as the title might suggest. Now, the title might suggest that we're talking about not being time bound by time as in the linear sense of not being bound by time. In other words, not being bound by the fact that time moves forward, not being bound by the fact that the effect of time on us. This is not what I mean. Naturally, the effect of time is always there for those who are living within a framework where time is active in that way. For example, our bodies, our physical surroundings, our gizmos that we use, the electronic things, they are all deteriorating in course of time because that's the nature of this particular realm we live in. In one sense, these things are also not bound by time in the sense of time making them a prisoner. Because after all, it is the nature of these things to be destroyed in due course of time. So they're not really bound by time, it's just their nature. They last, they have a beginning, they have an end, and that's just the way they work. One very intellectual lady was writing to me about the concept of eternity in a little way. And I made a comment which I thought might be a little bit radical, but I said to her, I didn't think eternity was a very important concept at all, or even something that one should worry about in the slightest. Or even when you speak about eternal time, it's something which is just a concept in the mind, it really doesn't exist. If you examine eternity from another point of view, you can see it as simply the ever-continuous present. All that really exists is the moment right now. Nothing else exists than that. The past does not exist anymore. It is something that has gone. It remains only as a memory or an imprint upon us. We are holding on to something from the past, and that attachment to it is its only reality to us. The future, or let's say, as a particular future, doesn't exist either, because it has not manifested yet. It has not come into existence yet. Now, the past and the future do exist as designations of all that has happened before and all that which will happen later on. But when you speak in terms of existence as a tangible reality that impacts me right now in my consciousness, which is a real action at the present, the only thing that counts is right now, because it's the only thing that really exists. But there's a problem with that concept too, because if you're only in the present right now, you are denying a lot of dimensions that time works in. For example, when I said that time only affects us according to our attachment to it, but what I was really saying, if you listen carefully, is that it does affect us now, the past time. All of these activities which happened in the past have an effect practically on me because they imprint themselves on me, on my consciousness. And because they imprint themselves on my consciousness now, they actually do exist, even though these things occurred in the past. My memory is there of all that has happened in the past, and in fact, even each of my cells are imprinted with these memories. There are whole sciences like core energetics, which are just simply meant to remove the memories in each of the cells and free us from the bondage to the past. And the past exists very real, in a real way right now, because I am a product of all my experiences that have been there before. So in fact, my present existence is the sum total of all my experiences of the past. So the past lives within me right now in the present. Now, when you think about the future, you can also see it in the same way, except backwards. All of the activities, all of the choices that I am making right now actually create, actually mold, actually set into motion consequences which will formulate future experiences. In other words, my choices now, or my choices now being a series of linear events that take place moment after moment, are placing future creations in the ether. They are setting it in the ether, ready to be manifested. Because these future potentialities are created by me, and they are connected to me because they're going to occur to or with me, I am linked with them right now. They link to me now because all of these future potentialities that I'm now creating, yes, they are going to occur to me, or they are probabilities to occur to me when I reach that point of maturity in the future. And because of that, there's a connection between me and my future, just as there's a connection between me and my past. And this connection is right here in the present. Now, one enlightened personality gave a completely different definition of time than we're used to hearing. We are used to hearing about time as a linear representation that goes point by point, one after another, from what we now call the past to what we now call the future, point by point. And because we see it that way, we deal with it that way. We live in it that way. That means we limit ourselves to this linear representation of our existence. This is something we consciously and subconsciously do at every moment, because we are conditioned to thinking of time in that way. And due to this, our lives have a certain characteristic way of unfolding. We follow certain rules. One of those rules is, it happened in the past, there's nothing I can do about it. Another of these rules is, it's set in the future by my consequences. My karma is set like that. There's nothing or little I can do about it. Now, neither of these rules are absolute. They are simply concepts we've chosen to believe, very seriously believe, and live by. You create in your life a certain kind of foundation which makes you feel secure. And the way in which time works is one of the axiomatic truths upon which our lives are based. And challenging this axiomatic truth is something which is a very troublesome situation for a lot of people. But today I want to challenge that axiomatic truth. The reason I'm thinking about this is because when I was writing up in my blog the meditations, I put down the meditation of dissolving the past. Now, I know it works. It works so well. It works so completely. It's amazing. And there's only one reason why it can work so well as it works. And that is because time is not this, what we expect it to be, this axiomatically accepted linear progression from beginning to end. For those of you who don't have experience with this meditation or who haven't read it yet, I'll just give a brief description. It's interesting. That meditation depends upon meditating on all those things in the past where someone has done something bad to you and you felt bad about them, or you've done something bad and you felt bad about yourself, and crossing it out with a big white X and having it simply dissolve away. This technique is so powerful that it's even hard to remember those things which you crossed out. They're not only crossed out of your memory, they seem to be crossed out of the ether. And because they are dissolved out of your memory, they are dissolved out of the ether, you no longer are bound, you no longer have connection to those things in the past. Well, just consider that. Now, I know some people are saying, well, I don't believe that's possible. But I have experienced that it is possible. So let's go from the point of view that it is possible. But considering that is true, what has happened is that you are reducing the influence of the past on the present. And by reducing the influence of the past on the present, you are coming closer to just the present alone. And if you think about, we've also done meditations to create a future that we want, which means taking control of the future and bringing it back here to the present. So you can see that as simply expanding the present, making yourself more empowered in the present. Well, that's one way to look at it, but let's look at it in another way, in the way in which I'd like to challenge our conceptions. Look at it this way, because actually this is closer to the way in which it works, or one of the ways in which it works. Now, I would have to be quite, shall we say, impudent to say that this is the way it works. Now, I don't want to say that because it works in many ways. Reality is not bound. The things that are bound is the way we choose to slice out of reality a certain piece of it for our perception, for our usage. This is the binding. Not that there's a bind in reality or boundaries in reality. Simply, reality is so vast. Reality has so many ways you can look at it. But we assemble reality in our consciousness in a certain way. And by a particular way, we create the boundaries. We set up the limitations. And when we create the boundaries and we create the limitations, we are responsible for the effect upon us. And one of the most amazing limitations we place upon ourselves is our desire to see time in that linear way, from beginning to end, from start to finish. Now, if you see eternal in a linear concept, meaning that that line has no end, you're missing the point of what eternal actually means. Try looking at it this way, and I know this is a little bit, shall we say, an unusual way to look upon time and existence. Just think, just allow yourself to think about the possibility, because we have to start in little steps, that all time exists right now. Since you have the control of slicing out reality and seeing it the way you want, why not choose to see all time as existing right now in the present? Just see it as expanding, not as a line, but as concentric circles, or as expanding circles outwards, as a large sphere instead of a line, as a sphere. Instead of seeing it as a series of events that once they happen, they're forever gone, see them as everything existing within this sphere, and to access it, you simply have to reach within the sphere in another direction. Instead of thinking of it as moments lost, think of it as moments misplaced. Now, I know this is difficult, but I want to go back to that meditation of the X out of previous events to use it as an example. Now, I know from when we did that meditation together, I think it was in December, if I can remember, before we were broadcasting, it was done just with the groups, two groups in Moscow and one group in St. Petersburg. Mostly everybody had a very good experience with that. And in that experience, we actually accessed that so-called, okay, in our new definition, so-called past. We accessed it. We went there. We dealt with it there, in its place in time. We actually felt ourselves, well, it depends on how good you were at it, but we felt ourselves there, connected to it, really embracing it temporarily. And then we actually erased it, dissolved it. Now, you could only do something like that if it was not a linear experience. If it was a linear experience where my moment right now is gone, it would not be, you would not have the capacity to do that. It would be impossible. But because it's there, you can access it, you can contact it so tightly, so in fact really, that you can deal with it. This proves time is not linear. Now, I know some of you are thinking, yes, yes, there are the Akashic records. All that has been spoken, all knowledge, all events are in the Akashic records. And if you have the capacity, you can go to them. Akashic records are all in the ether, imprinted in the etheric strata of the dimensions we live in. And even the Book of the Dead, the records which are kept on each and every soul. In Hinduism, they talk about Yamaraj's records or the Books of the Dead or the universal record keepers like Edgar Cayce used to see. These are different definitions of, or different, excuse me, explanations of the Akashic records. Now, in these conceptions, these are records that you can access. You can read off of. They're like accounts, historical accounts of what took place. And although this is a very wonderful thing, and although people who access these are very, very advanced, this is still the linear conception of time. It is nice, it is great, it is wonderful. It's not what I'm talking about. If you really wish to break free from this bondage of time, the technique to do it is to stop seeing time linearly and see it as a spherical existence. In a linear sense, you are over here. All that took place is gone. You've moved forward. You're now walking into the future. Everything else becomes lost, the past. In the spherical concept, you are in the center, able to reach anywhere within that sphere according to your capacity or your desire. Now, it would be a mistake to think that when you are here in the center is the right now, and everything else is some other point in time which has either gone by or will come. The way to actually look at it is to look at it from the point of view of the divine, where all of it is existing simultaneously, where you're access to any particular point anywhere in reality is from the point of view of the present, not from the point of view of some place in time. Your accessing of any part of your reality now becomes your present. You transform all of these delineations of backwards and forwards into a larger expanded right now. And with a little bit more mystic power, and I'm sorry to use that phrase because that's exactly what it is, but with a little bit more mystic power, you can relocate the center to any point within that sphere. Obviously, time is a big thing, and our consciousness cannot be everywhere in time. That's not possible. But that is the way God sees it. That is the way the Supreme sees it, as something which may be accessed at any moment as one wishes to do. Since everything exists within the Supreme does not have to move his or her center to any place to access it. It's always accessible. It's one complete unit of existence. Our power, being insufficient to comprehend all of existence at one moment, we must access it by shifting our concentration, shifting our consciousness to particular areas we wish to focus on. That power we do have. And by moving to these different areas of our lives and embracing the energy of that area, we can access anything, anywhere as our present. I remember reading in one of the Conversations with God books, or maybe it was one of the later books, that all time exists in a point. And it is not happening in a linear way with one thing stacked on the other, but it's all happening at once. It is one package. I never understood that. I mean, I tried real hard. I thought about it a lot. I mean, theoretically, it kind of maybe made some sense, but honestly speaking, I didn't get it. It was one of those things where I said, maybe that's just like some, you know, problematic thing that he wrote wrong, or could be anything, I don't know, it doesn't relate to me. But when we started doing these meditations about dissolving the past, I started to catch the point of the sphere. I started to catch the point that actually it's true. All time exists at the same time. There is only right now. There is only the present. This is the meaning of eternity, because it all exists at once now, and it always does that. So right now, all is existing. The spiritual realm, the etheric realms, the heavenly realms, the earthly realms, all realms existing, interrelated, interdimensionally, but all within the same sphere of right now. And the separations of distance, or the separations of dimensions, or the separations of so-called linear time, are our mental boundaries that we create. I don't go to some place. I don't go to the heavenly planets. I don't go to the spiritual world. It is not a physical transport. It is not something within time. It is not something within space. It is not something within particular step-by-step motions. It is a realization. It is an experience. It is an evolution. It is a waking up of what is already there and simply going, oh, that's it. Last week we did some journeying. We did some traveling together. There were a lot of very heavy and intense experiences. I got some letters. I wasn't asking for responses because I know you don't want to talk about it. That's fine. But there were a lot of deep experiences last week. We actually went somewhere. We actually walked to a place. Now, if you think about it, do you actually have to walk into the place? What is that walking? What you actually did was that you went with an expanding sphere of interdimensional time and space through the boundaries that you created. You have some reason to do it. It serves your purposes to have this boundary there, to have these walls there. It serves your purposes, so you keep it that way. But I opened the door to that boundary, and you let me do it. In reality, you empowered yourself to break down your boundary and walk through that boundary and travel within that sphere which no longer was bound in that way and meet deities who are there always within that grand understanding of existence. Those of you who did that dissolving of time, who do these travels, you know, know linear time does not exist. You know it, you've realized it, you've experienced it, and you can never go back to linear time. That's why you felt so different all this week. Because something very axiomatic changed within you. All of a sudden, the present, the now, made much more sense because it included much more than just that which is right before me in my face. That's why you feel different. It's kind of like a quest, it's kind of like a situation where you have to adapt yourself to a very expanded way of seeing things. Problems that were formerly there have now transformed into different situations. The realm of possibilities is now quite expanded because you're not just bound to go forward. I know that sounds completely insane, especially for those who weren't with us in these different meditations. This probably sounds totally insane. I can hear some of you saying, this guy, he is as nutty as a fruitcake. He is babbling all this like big word, you know, this new agey babble. He doesn't have no idea what's going on. It's just so simply a lot of talk. But my particular guarantee to you is I don't speak about things I haven't realized. I'm not repeating something I've heard because I don't even remember anybody speaking about it in this particular way, but that's not the point. And I know many of you have the same feeling. You just haven't been able to put it into words. So I'm trying to help you by putting it into words. Because what happened last week was an extremely significant event. And you know that. And it's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. Now, I've been specifically requested to speak today about how the deities relate to this situation. I remember, I don't remember when it was, but I remember the situation. I just don't remember when it was. Maybe 2 years ago. Masha, you might remember when we were coming back from the walk one day in the park and Kamala Mala was asking me about Gornatai and I was saying that, you remember that conversation? That they're not bound in being 500 years old. Do you remember that? You don't remember it. Okay, anyway. There's a very interesting phenomena when we deal with the deities, especially Gornatai. It also happens with Radha Krishna or anyone else. But because Gornatai was our main deities there in St. Petersburg, I thought I would use them as an example. And books like the Chaitanya Charitamrita or Chaitanya Bhagavata or anything about Lord Chaitanya tends to cement this idea too. Now these books, of course, are wonderful. That's not what I'm talking about. But we tend to see things in terms of linear time. So we tend to think of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda as historical personalities. If somebody asks us about them, we say, yes, they appeared more than 500 years ago in West Bengal to do this and do that and experience this and share with us that. And we can experience their mercy today in the form of the holy name or in the form of this or that movement or whatever. So we are, in essence, pushing them into the concept of our linear time. We lament, oh, I wish I could have been there at that time, and I want to just simply absorb myself in their pastimes at that time. And we will go to their place where they appeared, where they had their pastimes. And we will dress like them, and we will look like them, and we will do all those things that were done then. And the more a person could represent that, the more a person could represent that culture or that time or the way they were, the more we think, oh, they're so advanced and so fun to be around. We're just recapturing that time. Now, it's not like that completely. I'm not trying to paint everything into a corner like this, but it's to a large extent influenced by our linearity of time. And so in the same way we are bound, or we bind ourselves by time, in a similar way, we bind the deity. It's amazing. We bind Gaur Nitai to being historical personalities who, by the way, have some greater expanded divinity far away in the spiritual realm. Well, I don't see it like that. And according to my realization of the deities, they don't see it like that either. Now, I'm not going to be so bold as to tell you how they see or how they think, but just consider it logically. If we are also not bound by time, why should they be? I'm 57 years old. When I was 2 or 3 or 5 or even 10 or 12, I dressed differently, I ate differently, I acted differently, I did different things in a different time. When I was a child, TV was just created. When there were no anything special, I mean, everything was so simple as compared to now. And as time has progressed, so have I. I dress differently, I eat differently, I live differently, I relate with others differently. I adjust according to all the situations which are a creation of all persons and all things evolution. I'm just a regular old living entity here in this particular moment. Yet we think that the definition of the spiritual realm is that it never changes, that the deities never change, that it's static, it's one way, it's the ultimate, absolute, evolved situation beyond which nothing grows, nothing goes, nothing changes, it's all the same all the time. Just a lot of different ways in which that sameness interacts. But if you think about it, the way I change, the way I transform, the way I evolve has an effect, because there are many of us. These, all of us have an effect on the way in which the relationship is there with even the divinity, even with the devas and the heavenly planets. We affect each other. If we could not have an effect upon God, we would be meaningless. If you think God is so great, God is so wonderful, God is so powerful, we have no effect whatsoever on God, you have turned God into a cold, non-reciprocating entity who is never affected by anything that takes place outside of himself or herself. And a lot of people think like that. They even make that as part of their philosophy. Now, don't mistake the Supreme giving us freedom, the Supreme not wanting to interfere with us, as a cold, impersonal Supreme. You know, giving freedom is a lot of work, especially when those who wish to have that freedom are expanding their capacities to act. And at the same time, when you are inviting all the entities to relate with you, to reciprocate with you, to interact with you as the divine, there's a lot of transformation taking place. Now, Gornatai, if Gornatai were to say, to appear in St. Petersburg, for example, today, you think they would wear dhotis? Just think about that one point. Now, if Gornatai were to appear today, now one may say that's not what happened, okay? Because they appeared according to their eternal position. 500 years ago in Bengal, with everything being just the way it was, this was the eternal situation of Gornatai. And everybody in Gornatai's eternal realm always wears dhotis and saris because that's the eternal dress. It never changes. The only thing that changes is perhaps what they say, but everything else is always the same. And maybe what they say is always the same too. You know, they make jokes about each other and they do the same thing basically all the time. It's basically the same thing. So you have to just meditate on these same things all the time because it doesn't change. Now, these ideas are good because they help us focus on the divine. They help us get a handle on something which is way beyond our present conception. This allows us to relate with it in some way. But for thoughtful people who are used to this conception, just reach a little bit beyond it and see, wait a minute, it doesn't feel right. There's more to it here. After all, if Gornatai were to appear in St. Petersburg today, they would be wearing shirt and pants. And they would have a belt holding up their pants. They'd be wearing shoes and socks. When it was cold out, they'd be wearing a heavy jacket. Dancing in the streets of St. Petersburg. Organizing a rebellion against the mayor of St. Petersburg? And if they were to appear, would the people 500 years from now have deities of Gornatai on the altar with shirt and pants and belt and shoe and heavy overcoats in the winter? And would they be offered their traditional St. Petersburg food forever? Would they get... I won't get into it, but just get the picture. Understand, it's very amusing when you think about it like that. Just catch on to what I'm saying here. How we have limited, how we have restricted the deity's connection to us and to everyone by our linear understanding of time. Now, I guarantee you there's more than one person, especially since these lectures are available for download later on. There's people who are going to say, this is blasphemy. There will be brahmanas writing all kinds of things about how this is not the shastra and the shastra and the shastra. I can't argue against that. I don't really want to. I have no interest to do it. But Gornatai is not restricted to Bengal 500 years ago. They live right now. They are right here, right now, with me and with you. They live right now where we live. They can access all that we can access all the time. They are living personalities who are not cold and impersonal, but reaching out to us right now, to our hearts, right now, right here. Radha and Krishna as well, reaching out to us right here, right now. All the deities, right here, right now. And to see that, to realize that, to feel that, is to reach into the sphere where our consciousness may be at all times. And simply embrace them right here, right now. I see no benefit to be a prisoner of the past. In total chains, everything bound to the past. What happened in the past, what I did in the past, my sins of the past, traditions and cultures of the past. I similarly don't see any benefit in being enraptured by the future or afraid of the future. Those who live in a dream world of the future are in a pleasant prison. Those who live in fear of the future are in an unpleasant prison. Both of them are simply capturing them and not letting them go. So long as we live there, so long as we live there in the past or the future, we're being bound by time. We are prisoners of time. Now, it's a very interesting thing. I hope Gaura doesn't mind me talking about this, but in the free forum, in the free exchange in our harrymedia.net, Gaura wrote a very interesting text. He was describing his yoga of only being aware of the presence, of trying hard to concentrate on what is happening right now without losing the mind in the past or the future. This discipline of living right now in the present is harder than any living somewhere solitary in a cave. This is the real difficult yoga of all yogas. Yoga means to connect. And if you can connect to the present right now, right here, and to keep that connection, this is supreme yoga. Now, Krishna says, time I am. Interesting, interesting. Time I am. Did he mean I'm the past, I'm the future? How many philosophical problems come when Krishna's the past, Krishna's the future? Then why am I suffering for it? Let him. That discussion, that can go on for a couple of hours. I don't want to get involved in that. I want to stick to the point. Time I am. I say time I am means right now, right here, right in the present. When you are totally focused in yoga, you find God. I know some people will say the next words are, and I've come to destroy all things. That is not contradictory to what I just said. Because if you think of what it means, I've come to destroy all things, it means all things must change. You know, all things must change is quite different than I will destroy all things. To destroy all things doesn't mean you necessarily crunch them all up and spit them out in another form. You can't destroy energy. And after all, no one would accept that means to destroy all spiritual things or destroy the souls. And if everything is spirit anyway, what is being destroyed anyway? So what does that really mean? We're talking about to transform all things, change all things. Whatever was is not anymore because it changes. That is the destruction of that which was. So back to Kalosmi, I am time. That's right now, right here, this moment. That's where you'll find Krishna. Right now you'll find Krishna, you'll find Radha, you'll find Gornatai, you'll find all the deities, you'll find all divinity right now. Not in the past, not in the future, right now. Yet, people are lost in the past. Even you go around chanting, or you go around doing some kind of austerity, one's mind is filtering over what happened in the past and what they're going to do in the future. I'm sorry, that's not yoga. It's a ritual. It's mechanical. Yoga means to connect. To connect with right now. To be so much connected with right now that you can reach into your sphere of time or into your sphere of existence and go anywhere you want and connect to that piece of reality and do with it something as you wish. Especially you can mold the future. You can dissolve the past negativity to help mold the future in a very better, a much more beneficial way. Let's get practical for a second. Let's say I meet you. I want to relate with you. You say something to me that makes me remember or feel something from the past. I relate with you negatively, not because of you, but because of my relationship to my past. I'm a prisoner of the past. It's like I'm in my jail. Here are the bars. I'm holding on to the bars. And somebody comes on the other side who's not in my jail cell, says hi to me, and I'm just shaking the bars saying, "You damn bars, you damn bars." I'm not connecting to that person. There's no yoga there. I'm a prisoner of the past, and therefore I cannot connect to anyone. Or the past is so painful or so disturbing to me, I just lose myself in the rapture of the future. I dream of liberation. I dream of ecstasy. I dream of death, where I dream of then going back to Krishna. I dream. You cannot fulfill your dreams until you wake up. A dream is asleep. A reality is awake. Yoga is only done by awake people, not asleep people. You cannot do yoga while sleeping. Therefore, the present. Now, I know some people think Buddhism, specifically Zen Buddhism, sometimes they say, "Oh, this is a very bad thing." That's because they're living in concepts. They're living in these ideas of what is good and bad that have nothing to do with right now. I used to be, actually, a long time ago, Zen Buddhist. And believe it or not, I was really good archer and a super good sword fighter. So just consider being an archer and never letting the arrow go. But just simply, and by the way, Arjuna is an archer. He was pretty Zen. Just holding that arrow and just so much being in the present that everything is there in this act of shooting the arrow. You never have to let the arrow go, because the point is not shooting an arrow. Shooting an arrow is an act of time whereby you put an arrow on the shaft, you aimed it, you shot it. It was on the shaft. Now it's in its target, and then something else happened. But the Zen of the situation is the act of simply being in this perfect harmony. You, the arrow, the bow, the target, the time. Now my arms are getting tired. I can't do that anymore. If you were to shoot the arrow, it would go right where it was supposed to go. Because you are so in tune and so in harmony with this moment. If you did let it go, it would be absolutely perfect. But why should you let it go? After all, you're not trying to shoot arrows. That's not the point of the discipline. The point is to be so connected with the moment of just to release, to be connected with the moment just where the release would take place, yet never release it. Just like if you were to do it and you really had to do it. I mean, there was really something significant, some reason. Maybe there was somebody attacking you, or you had to do it for some reason. That moment when you let go was filled with dread, was filled with fear, was filled with anticipation. It was also filled with just resignation. Oh, anyway, you know, fear. Is it going to hit? Am I going to do it right? Is my hand going to slip? I got to do it anyway. Because of all of these emotions around the shooting, naturally, it'll be a risky proposition whether you hit what you're aiming at or not. But in the Zen of the moment, there's no fear, there's no anxiety, there's no anticipation, there's no dread, there's no resignation. Not only that, there's not even a need to shoot. Now somebody may say, then why bother doing it? The reason is because it's a discipline. If you had the same discipline, the same capacity to be right there in the moment, and you chanted Krishna once, it would have the complete and full effect of eternity. But because we don't have such discipline, but because our minds are so conditioned by linear time, because our whole understanding is so rooted in past and future, we have to put a lot of quantity, we have to put a lot of effort, a lot of sweat, we have to do so many things, we have to be so active to just simply hope that we're going to evolve and feel bad about doing it while we're doing it. I say the yoga is right now. I say the deities are here right now. Time I am right now. The time, the moment. That is where you will find God. By always presently being wherever you are. Full acceptance of now. Full acceptance of me now. Full acceptance of you now. Full acceptance of God now. The deities now. Let's not put the deities back in time. Let's not put spirituality stuck in time. Because people change, time change. If we don't go with the time that is now, we are lost. Lost somewhere in the past. Lost somewhere in the future. Bound by time. So why is the lecture called Not Bound by Time? Because the whole theme is to do the yoga of the now, the yoga of presence, the yoga of being. And what is the being? The being is love, because that's all the spirit is, the pure, unalloyed, unconditional love. That is the being. And being is now, because being only exists right now, in that spherical, all-encompassing present. And that being now is the only being now that can connect with other beings now in love. Is this not bhakti? In this meditation, we are going to do something which goes back to some basic things. And I'm sorry for those who don't require so much, but still, there are many more people involved now. We're going to start from the platform of the complete relaxation exercise so that I have it for recording, so we can put it up on the website that anyone can use it at any time. And then after we finish that complete relaxation, we're going to do pyramid building. We're going to build a pyramid around us. And then we're going to do the I Am meditation. The pyramid building requires that you create a space around you. Let me see if I get back here so those of you who look can see. That space is... I'm sorry, I forgot about the translation. Go right ahead. Yayest, I like that. So then, the meditation of the pyramid will require that you build a pyramid around you. It'll be on the floor. The camera's not going here to the floor. And what you will do is you will build like rods that make a perfect square around you. And then rods that go up over your head, so that it becomes a perfect pyramid shape, right? So you basically know what a pyramid shape is. You'll have to make these rods go up over your head and connect here at the top, because it's very hard to make a wall, so we just make rods. And we will meditate within that pyramid that we are creating. It will enhance the energy. And within the pyramid, you will bring down energy from above directly into your pyramid, and you will fill your space within the pyramid with that energy that we wish to have. It is easy to do. And both these meditations are on the harimedia.net under my blog. So now we will start. So when you are in your pyramid, you are actually experiencing creating a space which is no longer bound by time. A space all your own, a space which you can control as you like. And when one comes very much in the moment, time becomes a similar experience. A similar experience. At this point, if anybody would like to ask anything about our experiences, I would be glad to discuss the point further. You can write me on Microsoft Network Messenger if you like. You don't have to have any question. You don't have to have anything. Okay? Okay, in Russian. His question was, why did we use the colors of pink, white, and violet? And the answer is that pink is a very powerful color of love. It somehow embodies, represents, and can emanate the power of love. When you see or feel the color pink, it just makes you feel of love. It gives you this feeling of love. But pouring crystals into the pink is not compatible. It is an invasion into the sanctity of that pink love. So we mixed first white in to make it a very subtle shade of pink. White is a very neutral color. White is a color which contains all colors. It's a color which, being neutral, mixes with anything very well. It's a color which just cleanses very nicely. And then when we put the crystals in, a crystal can be a clear, neutral reflector of anything around it. But crystals make everything very effulgently so. So we put crystals into this lightish pink to make a lightish pink effulgence, which is magnified by the crystals. And then, in that effulgent lightish pink, we replaced it with violet, because violet is the color which embodies evolution the best. Violet is the color of highly evolved souls. It's a color which, in and of itself, is very highly evolved. It's way up in the spectrum, like ultraviolet is the highest color in the spectrum, visible spectrum. Well, it's not visible either, but anyway. So this violet, it brings us to a higher frequency. A higher frequency which brings us closer in touch with ourselves, our own higher frequencies, which we actually are. And when we contact ourselves, our own higher frequency, it's easier for us to contact the Supreme, because we, being non-different in energy with the Supreme, the energy, the frequency, is of the same quality. when we are of our higher frequency to connect to the Supreme in this larger sphere of energy is easy. In fact, it's natural. So it is a very helpful, very expansive color, a very expansive energy, very highly evolved. And using, for example, the violet flame, you can burn up all negativities in yourself by just becoming that violet flame and just burning up all negativities and being purely that spiritual energy. So in this way, violet is very, very, very useful and harmonious for us who wish to spiritually advance. Any other question? The first lady we healed with the group meditation got very much better. The second lady mysteriously got better because she was not really she was not like such a believer, and she just got better. It's not like it was like a very rapid thing for her. She just got better. Now, you know, some people very much like to do this healing, and some people really dislike doing this healing. And because there was a significant number who didn't want to do it, we didn't do it anymore. We are just mainly concentrating on ourselves. It's my opinion that it's a natural consequence of feeling very powerful in yourself and feel very loving in yourself to actually wish to heal others. It's a natural consequence. It's not an unusual thing. It's not like an imposition. It's just a natural consequence. You want to be of service like that. You don't like to see people suffering. But I understand there are people who very much want to concentrate on their own development and very much want to get to the point where they have such experiences or just don't feel like doing it. That's fine. And I'm very happy to work in that dimension. But I know I won't mention names because I don't want to embarrass. Somebody just wrote me yesterday that they used the same technique we were using in the group to heal somebody mysteriously who was very sick. And I said, that's just wonderful. You know, you're using these techniques and just doing something great for others. That's just fantastic. Because all healers really do is they take the energy from the group, but not this group like us. They take the energy from the group of those higher dimensions. They take that group's energy and heal with it. So I was trying to give everybody a taste of how to do that, how to connect to that, how to be part of that healing energy. And if you feel inspired, you can use the same exact technique, the same exact energy of the group, the higher group, and bring good energy of healing to another. And healing can take place on a lot of different levels. It doesn't just have to be fixing a mistake in the body. If anybody in Sambartika's place or in Buenos Aires there in Panchadara's place want to ask a question, I can just open up the audio connection between us, and you can also speak and everybody can hear you too. It's easier than if you don't want to write it. Just let me know. And if there are any other groups of people around who... Okay, I'm opening up Buenos Aires. Hang on. Any other groups of people around who want to be part of that, that's no problem because I have a lot of download bandwidth here. I've got 5 megabits bandwidth possible. And I could have more people in on this conference that I could see too. Okay, Buenos Aires, you're on the line. You're on the air. Hello, Buenos Aires. You want to speak? You have to turn on the mic. Don't hear you. In TACOMF, you have to go to settings and make sure you have your sound card set as the input device and make sure your recording mic level is quite high or high enough. Nope. Okay, another question from St. Petersburg in the meantime. You can translate. That happens when one starts to feel a little bit of fear inside. Oh, there you are. Wait, let me just finish this. When one starts to feel a little bit of fear inside because of lack of experience, I've noticed that when we started doing these meditations, that people had a lot of trouble with it. And because of that, it will disappear, hopefully, within a couple of times of doing such kind of meditations. Is my voice still breaking now? Yeah, it's because in Buenos Aires, somehow their connection's not good uploading, and I'm having a hard time even uploading their picture, so I can't allow an audio conversation with them. So, Panchadara, you want to ask... Oh, Umakanta wants to ask a question. You have to write it. You can't do it vocally. It's not working with the connection. Uploading to me is difficult for you, unfortunately. So that's a problem. Okay, Umakanta, you can ask in writing. It would be better. I don't think we can handle the upload connection for some reason. Or I'll try it. You can speak now. You heard that, Mashai? He can't hear it. Sorry. It's in Russian. He was trying to talk to you. That doesn't work. You have to write it. Write it, please. Sorry. That doesn't work. You have to write your questions, okay? Masha, I'm going to add Parijat into the discussion, so you can write in Russian directly to Masha if you want. I told them in writing that they can do that. The music on the website, describe it? Okay. One of the songs, the one that's called Spirals, was from one of the times I played in St. Petersburg. It's like a Living Dreams kind of thing, but just not as good. When I made Living Dreams, it was taken from the best music that was made live before the lectures in St. Petersburg there. Because I get very inspired when I'm able to connect to the deities musically and they can play their music through me. That's how I feel. But my capacity to connect musically like that is limited. I mean, there are many other factors involved, like the audience, my mood, and the world, and so many things. So it's not all the time I can do that. So I pick out those which are really good, which I really felt connected, and I put them on Living Dreams. There were other ones which were really good, but unfortunately they were recorded really bad, so we could not reproduce them for you. Now, this one, Spirals, is one which I did live but wasn't good enough to put on the CD, so I just put it up on the website if you want. Now, there's another one in that mood called Dolphin Meditation Music. And the reason it's called that is because one healer and psychic lady once came to visit us and gave me what she called a dolphin healing. And right after she did that, I went into my room and I recorded this. And I thought myself that was actually the best one I had ever done in that genre. Because I felt the music very much as music. Then there are three others. Actually, four others. There's one more. It's a Nisringa song, a Nisringa flow. And the reason it's called Nisringa flow is because the group I was having in Sweden was called The Flow. And The Flow was myself and John Strider and Johann Sebastian Maximilian. These were people who I knew in Sweden. Now, if you've ever seen the TV show Dark Angel, it's been kind of syndicated around the world. One of the songs they played on that show was created by John Strider. And Johan, he is an excellent, excellent, excellent bass player. So we got together really well in our music. And I played Mridanga and sang on this Nisringa Flow song while Jan played the bass and John played the piano. We just kind of invented it on the spot. And so we were trying to create a mystical mantra mood. It wasn't so great. I mean, it was okay. So I just put it up just for your listening fun. The other three songs were the beginning of an album I started making in 2002 in Sweden. And the song Slinky is just a kind of like a beady guitar thingy. It's kind of like a raga thingy, just some fun. The song Afro Mix actually was a very funny song, how that got developed. There was this professional music producer who's the sister of one of the very, very good friends of Kamala, just came over to visit. So she wanted to know what I was doing upstairs where I had the studio. So she wasn't very familiar with computerized sequencing. She was more doing it live with orchestras and choruses. So I just showed her. And I had just picked off a sample from my sample CDs of these Africans. And then I just put a beat on. And I didn't even think if they would fit together. I just put them there to show what you can do with a computer. And when I heard them, they were perfectly together, as if I put them there purposefully. So while she was watching, I just quickly did the bass and the flute, and she was totally knocked out with what you can do with computers. And I said, hey, I'm going to keep that. So I made the rest of the song after that. And I was just experimenting with putting a lot of sounds in my little chorus and playing guitar backwards and just doing any strange and weird thing I could to make like this mood with this boom, boom, boom. It was just a mood, nothing special. And then the other song, Fat Man, it's called Fat Man because there's many of me singing on it in different tracks. So I called it Fat Man. It's just totally nonsense talk, but in a rhythm, whatever rhythm kind of a thing. So it's just a musical rhythm, but with the voice. It, nothing significant about it. And then, the reason why I'm making this music available free, and I know some people are saying this is kind of crazy, but my philosophy is like this, that what's the use of it if nobody listens to it? If I'm going to be in this illusion that somebody's going to buy this someday, well, I'll just basically have nobody listen to it, and then I won't make any more. So I figure it's better you listen to it than don't even charge you for it. That way you'll listen to it, and then I have an excuse to make more someday. And ultimately, if you like what I'm doing, you can just give a donation to help support it. And if you don't want to give a donation, it's up to you. But I'm just leaving it there, up to as you like. I know it's a little risky to do that, but I hope, Gaura, you put on the website where that download is, that all of this music is copyright me. That's very important. I'll write something about it. So basically, you're free to listen to it on your own, but you can't, like, sell it to someone else or, you know, take credit for it. Now, I've got a question here from Umakanta. He's asking me to please recommend some techniques for entering the past or the future. Well, I purposefully avoided talking about that in this particular discussion because that's a little too advanced for this. We have to go step by step. To just jump into this, it's too much all at once. But the principle is that first, when one understands that time is not linear and that time is an all-present existence, going into the past or future is no longer a question because you don't consider it the past or future, therefore you have nowhere to go. Instead, you harmonize with a particular time-space within the continuous existence of the all-encompassing present. Now, of course, I can easily say that, and you can all go, okay, yeah, but practically speaking, what that means is another whole discussion. But just as you can harmonize into your pyramid, you can harmonize to dissolve the past, you can harmonize to create a future, you can harmonize to be in those places. It all depends on how you wish to intend and concentrate your consciousness. So I have to leave it at that because it's too entangling to go further. Mukti is asking about, he got the impression that I was saying something that would mean rejecting tradition or culture or the past. Now, I'm not saying anything that would reject anything. I'm simply saying don't be a prisoner of it. There's a difference. You see, to accept the past is no problem. To accept tradition is no problem. To accept culture, that's not a problem. But to be a prisoner of it, that is a very serious problem. And if like now they're asking, if there's a good time, let's say you have a good time in the past, right? You had a real good time in the past. Then what you do is you bring the good time with you. The good time's still there with you, understand? Now, here I'll explain that a little bit more because I think it's very, very, very relevant. Sometimes people write to me, even people who have some connection now, they say, why did you leave us in the past? Why did you leave us even though there were so many good things in the past? And I scratch my head because, you know, well, I'm right here. I mean, what does leave mean? I'm right here, right now. If you want to be here, well, be here. Then nobody left nobody. We're here together, right now. You have something good from the past? Well, bring it with you right now in our relationship. But don't try to make me a prisoner of that past good time. Because I'm living right now, not then. The good of then is fine. It's still here. Think about it. Do I know you now? Or do I know you then? Do you know me then? Or do you know me now? Where do I live? Do I live in the then? Or do I live in the now? And does good exist only because something happened then? Or does the good exist as good, which is also right here, right now, as good? Was there love then? And why is it not now? If you say there was love then, but there is no love now, well then, whose fault is that? If the love is living in the past, you can't have a connection to that person who lived in the past, because you can't connect to love in the past. That's a memory. So I kind of like always, I'm amused. I'm very amused by this mentality that people bring forward about any movement now towards really connecting with the present, right now, me, you, all of us, right now, in the present, somehow implies a rejection or a not acceptance of the past. It doesn't do that at all. It's funny how people think change means worse. Change means something's not good anymore. And I'm amazed by people who define reality like that. Change is going to happen whether we like it or not. Better we go with it. There are people who fight change to the very end. No, I will not change. There will be no transformation. What is now shall always be. But the amazing thing is, everybody changes anyway. Especially those who fight it the most. Those who fight it the most often have the biggest, most obvious transformations. That's me. And hey, if you just think about all of the tens of thousands of people who used to be involved in this spiritual life who are not there anymore, and the very small number of people who are there now, I mean, where is it? Where is the connection? Is it to not change or to actually change and meet people face on where they are? And wherever there is good, to accept that good. Wherever there is a wonderful connection, to accept that connection without being prejudiced and without being bound by rules or time that says, no, you can't. I don't know if that answered your question. I tried. Let me know if it did. Okay, I got a thumbs up, kind of. Now, I got here a comment from, I don't know who, but there in Sambardhika's flat, they said, we already used hypnosis and relaxation techniques for entering into past lifetimes. Well, look, when you are in such a hypnotic state, and you are experiencing, even down to the cellular level, the experiences of that time, it proves that that time is still existing right now. It's the proof of what I was saying. But what I was speaking about just to Umakanta and alluding to as a more advanced technique, which we'll get to, but not now, is something different. Because in that technique, you are entering into a very particular slice of your previous existence and contacting that as if you were there. And I am speaking about being here and connecting to it then with the full control of now, not being bound to being into what happened then. There's a huge difference. We are talking about time traveling here, and I didn't want to touch on that right now. I think we are some distance away from that. I mean, you people are too much. I mean, here we are traveling all over the universe as it is. Now you want to travel through time. I mean, you got such an insatiable appetite. I mean, really. Sometimes I get this feeling that I sit here on Saturday and there's this big mouth on my screen saying, feed me, ah! Hey, I'm not complaining. I'm just describing how it seems sometimes to me. It's a little bit, it can be a little frightening. You know, it's a little frightening. You look at it and you go, woo, how do I feed that mouth? I mean, what do I do here? Okay. Okay, trusting oneself. That's a tough one. You know, anybody who, is that lady somewhat psychic? Yeah, so all somewhat psychic people have a real trouble with that one, trust. It's a real issue, I tell you. Because, you know, you hear so many things, you understand so many things, you see things, and like your biggest struggle is, well, can I believe it? Can I trust what I'm getting? Can I trust me who's perceiving all this? It's a psychic's dilemma. Now the problem is if you don't trust, you can't function psychically. And if you wish to function, you have to just trust it and go with it and don't worry about it. But because you're sensitive, you always have in the back of your mind, well, what if this is wrong? What if that's not right? What if it's my mind? What if it's a speculation? Frankly, it's really no fun being psychic and working with it. It's a real struggle. Because you always have this like battle going on in your head, you know, how to balance it, how to work with it, how to use it, how to help people with it, and how to believe in yourself with it. It's a constant back and forth thing. It just, I don't think it really resolves in honest people. You know, and that's a good thing. That's a good thing. My advice would be, don't let yourself be fooled into thinking you've got it all together. It's just, I think, the death of your capacity. That doubt, that always acts as a kind of a self-policing force. It acts as a self regulating force to keep you honest and caring about others. And so I would recommend to just allow this constant shifting of the balance in the head to always be going on. Allow it and just respect the process without judging it, without saying it's good or it's bad, that you're good, you're bad, that you can trust, you can't trust yourself. Just allow this process to go on and just keep it in some kind of reasonable balance. Not that it goes all the way down, oh, I don't trust anything, or it goes all the way up, oh, I trust everything. But allow this constant change within this, could it be so, maybe it's this way, I think it's very much this way, I will express that, but I have to always be careful. Allow this to go on, accept it, respect it, feel good about it, because there's nothing else you can do anyway. Did that help? Oh, good. Thank you very much. I'm glad to have been of service. Okay, well, it's getting near to be 2 o'clock my time, 10 o'clock St. Petersburg, Moscow time, I guess 4 o'clock Buenos Aires time, and I think we'll close down for today. And I'd like to once again thank you so much for participating together with me in this opportunity to communicate and connect. And I feel an enormous support from all of you. Just your presence gives me a great support, so I can feel that I have some value in life, and I like to do what we're doing here, and I hope that I will always remain relevant to you. And if I become not so relevant, you just give me a little tap on the back and say, hey, sir, let's fix this here. We'll keep everything honest. Okay. Bye-bye, all of you. I'm signing off. I hope you're all going to become so prosperous and so peaceful and happy and fully blessed by all of the higher authorities, by Sri Sri Radha Krishna, by Sri Sri Gaura Nithai, and just really ecstatic in your lives. Bye-bye. Thank you. Hari Bol.